What happens when a society rejects divine authority? Is Satan trying to set up his own kingdom? Why is there a war on children? On this slice of fresh bread. Welcome to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church, Gainesville, with Pastor Brandon and Pastor Keith. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to Fresh Bread, Fresh Bread Podcast 65. Fresh Bread, where we're bringing the truth of God's Word to a starving world, and we're glad you clicked on, and we have some exciting stuff to talk about today, like we always do. I'm Pastor Keith. He's Pastor Brandon. And Pastor Brandon, I thought we would spend this podcast, let's just talk a little bit about some of the things that may be coming up in the next few months, because you know, you just don't know. We live in a wacky world. There are many that believe that, hey, you know what? Things are going to kind of go on like they always do. I don't think anything big is going to happen. You made that bold prediction on our last podcast. You didn't think Biden would be president or Donald Trump would be president. We've talked to some people who said, it's going to be Biden. It's just going to go on as usual. And then we have some people who say, wow, there's a lot of changes happening in our world, and they're happening so fast that there has to be a change coming up before November, that things are going to change. We don't really know for sure. Like you always say, we're not prophets and we're not sons of prophets, but we can kind of feel the way the world is going, that something is not right. What do you think about all that? That was a long intro.
You know, I did make the prediction last time that I didn't think neither Donald Trump or Biden would take office in November, well, and ultimately in January. But, you know, you mentioned one of our listeners, not challenging that, but just, you know, saying, hey, I think it's going to kind of be status quo. And, you know, he used Occam's razor as sort of the simplest explanation, you know, whatever the simplest thing that can happen is probably what's going to happen. And in his mind, you know, the simplest thing is things continue status quo. And, you know, Joe Biden wins the election, you know, that they, it's interesting because, I mean, this person actually said that, you know, he felt like, I think the sense that I got from him is that he felt like that Joe Biden and the Democrats stole the election in 2020. And, you know, that there's no reason to believe that they wouldn't do the same thing again in 24 and basically using the same playbook. And, you know, the truth is, I wouldn't be surprised if that's correct. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, be blown away by that. I mean, it makes sense that it worked in 2020. So why not try it again in 24? I mean, frankly, for me, though, what kind of keeps me from thinking that that's what's going to happen is because in 2020, it was pretty ludicrous, you know, some of the vote counts. And, you know, it was very difficult. It's very difficult to reconcile that Joe Biden got, I forget how many more votes than Obama did, when you're one of the most popular figures ever to be president, you know, one of the most popular overall figures of, you know, in terms of the presidential elections. And, you know, you have Joe Biden who outstrips him by, I don't know, I forget, like I say, it's a huge amount of votes. And, you know, the truth that you could say, well, you know, Biden, you know, voting for Biden was a vote for Obama, and you know, that it was more important because they wanted to vote down Trump. And I get all that, but it still didn't fit mathematically, you know, is what I saw. But I, you know, again, if that's the playbook they want to use and that's what they end up trying to do, you know, we'll see. I will say that it seems like they have enough complicit judges and juries at this point that, you know, that they can get away with just about what they want in the right courtroom. And so, you know, I think what's hard is that, you know, the Supreme Court, that, you know, it, even though it's got Republican or conservative majority, the Supreme Court hasn't been shown to really stand up in certain ways. I mean, there's some guys that are centrist, especially the Chief Justice is, you know, he's willing to vote on the liberal side, you know, at times and follow that side of things. And so, you know, I don't have a lot of confidence one way or the other, whether it's the same playbook or whether it's, you know, something different. I don't have a lot of confidence that we can get a candidate in office that's going to lead us in a direction
that Christians would want to go.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. And that, like I said, I don't think we want to make this always about politics, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to set a foundation for what could be coming in the next few months. So we're trying to just let everybody know you might want to put your big boy pants on, lace up your shoes a little tighter, because we don't know what's coming. We just have a feeling that something is amiss in our society. And that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you and just see what you felt about it.
You know, we definitely want to bring biblical truth to a starving world. You know, that's our tagline. And I don't think there's anything bigger that I can tell right now, you know, than what's happening politically. And we need to have a biblical answer for that. You know, how do we live in light of what's going on in our world and what's happening politically? And so, especially in the United States, that I think that we, over the next few months, we do need to address these things, and we will address them as they come up.
I couldn't have said that better if I'd said it with somebody else saying it. I wanted to ask you, do you think our society has abandoned divine authority? That's number one. And number two, if it has, what happens when a society does that?
Well, I think there is a deep divide in our country right now. There are those on one side who would say, no, we don't need to abandon divine authority. They would say that God is the authority, that God is the ultimate authority over the world that we live in, and that God is the ultimate authority, you know, in terms of the United States and the government, I think there's a lot of people who would say on one side, we need to continue to follow God's rule. I think that on the other side, there is a growing number of people who have abandoned divine authority. And, you know, you can include in that group, obviously, those who are atheists, those who are agnostic, but you can also include in that group, you know, a lot of the mainline denominations that have capitulated to the culture. You know, that there's a growing number of people who would say that you keep politics completely separate from, you know, who God is, and it's, you know, the secular politics, and you don't bring God into it. And there are becoming fewer people on that side who would be what you might call centrist. Then you have, on the other side, you have, you know, obviously the people I described who would say yes, that we need to, you know, follow what God has to say. And then you probably have a group in the middle that could go either way, depending on how the wind is blowing. But I think, unfortunately, the wind has been blowing for a long time. For several decades, the wind has been blowing, you know, taking prayer out of school, taking the Bible out of school, you know, even the idea of public school the way it is, and those sort of things. I mean, you're getting way back, you know, even in the late 19th century, early 20th century. There's a centrist group who I believe will go wherever the wind is blowing. They don't necessarily have a lot of convictions. And more recently, over the last several decades, the wind seems to be blowing in a secular direction. You know, Donald Trump has, you know, whether Donald Trump wins or not, I think the question, you know, really is what happens with that group in the middle, and, you know, how do they react? I do think that if the wind ever started blowing the other way, more in the direction of, you know, conservatism, more in the direction of morality, God setting what morality, you know, setting morality. I do think that a lot of people in that middle group will move, you know, more right or that direction. So I just think it's more complicated than our country has. I think it's more complicated than our country is now godless. I don't see it that way. I don't think our country is godless. I think there's just a powerful group on, you know, on the left side that really has swayed things over the past several decades and made it seem like that you can't speak plainly in, you know, the public square about your belief in God and his authority.
When did that start, as far as, you know, now people are saying if you don't use the correct pronouns, you can be thrown in jail. We talk about free speech and all these things. When did that change? Like, who has the power to make these laws and the way that we talk? You know what I mean?
Well, I think that those on that side, whether you call them the left or whether you call them liberal or whether you call them whatever you call them, those who are on really the anti-God side, you know, I think they captured the minds and the hearts of, I think they realized that the education system was the way to do this. Like, I think they attacked through the education system. And I think that they ended up taking over many of the major posts in that system and ended up building that system in their own likeness. You know, it's funny because we've heard of the Dewey Decimal System. Well, you know, Dewey, who came up with that, you know, he had a huge agenda, you know, in terms of the education system. And, you know, and we see, you know, looking back on it, you know, you see in the 1960s, they pulled prayer out of school. They, you know, you can't, you know, have the Bible, a Bible class, kind of, you know, in most schools. You know, you can't speak openly about God in most places, you know, at least in the classroom. And so, you know, there's no, you know, you think about even the Scopes Monkey trial, you know, that happened, which was really not a trial at all. I think it was all set up just to make Christians look bad, quite frankly. And so when you put all that together, it's just been a drift, you know, for the past, well, really since the late, probably since the late 19th century. Then you have in the 20th century under Jimmy Carter, you have the Department of Education, that now the federal government is putting money into the school system. They're the ones that are driving the funding. And, you know, so therefore there's a unification of this curriculum, you know, and the curriculum now is an anti-God curriculum. And so, long story short, I think that's how they did it. I think they went through the education system. They built an anti-God curriculum. They taught an anti-God curriculum, and they won the hearts and minds of many youth. And you know, if you were a youth in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, you're now in charge of the country. And, you know, and I think that, you know, in the midst of all of that, the church was weakened, and, you know, the mainline denominations began to fall away. And when you put all that together and, you know, and you look at it as a whole, you see this incredible drift away from, you know, biblical truth. And you see that, you know, as people get older, as they, you know, as they begin to come in positions of power, they begin to, you know, make more and more influential decisions, you know, that are anti-God and, you know, anti-Bible. Certainly in the past four decades, you know, churches have had a focus on, you know, the churches that have been well attended. You know, you talk about the mainline denominations, and obviously, I mean, I say obviously, but, you know, that the attendance in the mainline denominations has dropped dramatically. Influence of the mainline denominations has dropped dramatically, and I think that's tied to a departure from biblical truth. But at the same time, you've seen there's other churches that have risen to prominence, but the problem is that those churches haven't focused on teaching biblical truth, especially teaching biblical truth to the children and to the youth. And so you end up basically having a curriculum in the churches where we're teaching, you know, kids Bible stories. And I'm not against Bible stories, but if you don't teach kids, you know, biblical truth that can combat what they're hearing in the school, you're not going to be able to compete. You know, it's just not, you know, they're not going to understand, you know. So, you know, they, you know, if we just teach them about Noah's Ark, but we don't teach them, you know, the reason for the Ark, if we don't teach them about the flood, if we, you know, show them the, you know, the garden and all the pretty little animals that are in the garden, but we don't teach the significance of creation and God created, if we don't do that in the churches, in our children's ministries and our youth ministries, if we don't teach them the significance of the cross, if we don't teach them the significance of the Messiah, the Lord Jesus, then, you know, when they get into a classroom with an atheistic professor or teacher that's going to combat those things in a way that they can't, these students can't stand up to. And so it ends up being kind of battling, you know, a cannon with a pea shooter. I mean, it just doesn't work. And so a lot of these kids have fallen away, and you know, we've lost them, and we continue to lose them, quite frankly, because we're still focused on the old youth group models and you know, making it fun and, you know, making it exciting and playing games and all that, when they need biblical truth. They need to be taught biblical truth. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to continue to happen until churches and pastors realize, you know, the war that we're really in.
Do you believe that our society has abandoned divine authority or is about to?
Well, I believe that in Washington, at the federal level, I believe that they have, by and large, the leaders of our country, president, vice president, the houses of Congress, and to a certain degree, the Supreme Court, I believe those folks have abandoned biblical authority. I mean, by and large, not everyone, not 100%, but I think in terms of us having, real allies in at that level, I think as Christians wouldn't find allies at that level. Now, you know, there are pockets, you know, within states and city government that I think we still have, you know, we still have people that would go with biblical authority, that would understand biblical authority and vote that way and lead that way. But the problem is that the federal government has become such a behemoth of power that it's very difficult to do anything in this country that would be in a positive direction morally, in a positive direction, you know, with God's authority, because of, you know, what's happening at the federal level and what's, you know, who the leaders are there. And it's not just, but it's also, the CIA, the FBI, there's good folks in those areas, but by and large, the leaders, I think, have abandoned biblical authority. The Department of Education, same thing, have abandoned biblical authority. So I think the government itself, the federal government for sure, has by and large abandoned biblical authority. Then you look at the states, you know, like California, New York, Illinois, you know, the ones that are definitely Democrat, you know, in the Democrat side, you know, that are staunch Democrat. I think that those states are by and large gone and are not following biblical authority. But, you know, you have other states like Florida, Texas, that the battle is still being fought. And, you know, we still have people, you know, in charge that would understand biblical authority. Even, you know, there may be, I mean, like, I think DeSantis is Catholic. You know, I think he would still understand, you know, the authority of the Bible, and definitely would be more moral in that way. And I just don't see it as being a straight line. Yeah, we've completely abandoned biblical authority. I think there's pockets where that hasn't happened. I think there's pockets of areas where it hasn't. But I think where it really matters, if you look at the federal government and how powerful it is, that's where it, you know, that's overshadowing everything. And so if you just look at it from that perspective, absolutely, our country has abandoned biblical authority.
Okay. That was a good answer. It was yes. So is
I assume you don't want me to just say yes or no?
Because I'm kidding. No, it's good. It's good to hear you. Your brain is functioning well. So is Satan, now that we're looking at the way our world, we are living in what we consider end times. We don't know how long those end times will go, but as we look at the world, as we look at these societies, is Satan building a kingdom?
Okay, so I mean, that goes back to, it's interesting because when I preach through, you know, Matthew 3 and 4. Okay, so I think that what we have to recognize is that God is in full authority. God is over everything, including Satan. And yet Satan has been given by God authority to rule over the kingdom of this world. So Satan biblically has a kingdom, and that kingdom encompasses this, you know, the world that we live in. And you'd have to argue that our country is part of that, you know, that he has control in those areas. I mean, he's the one who has control in this world. Again, reminding ourselves that it's not, you know, that God has given him that ability to rule, but that ultimately God is the one who's in authority. And so that ultimately, and that's where, you know, Christ came, and Christ is now, you know, because of, you know, through the church is now, you know, that his kingdom is already not yet. There's a sense where in the church he's already ruling, that his kingdom is already here, but ultimately his kingdom hasn't fully been inaugurated. And so in the meantime, this is, you know, that Ephesians 2, you know, in Ephesians 2, Paul says in verse 1, "And you were dead in your transgressions and sins, in which you formerly walked according to the course of this world, according to the ruler of the power of the air." And I think right there, you know, obviously there's a course of this world, according to Paul. There's a way this world is working. And when he speaks of the world, he's talking about the world system. He's talking about politics. He's talking about the way the world is ran. But then he says, according to the ruler of the power of the air. Well, who is the ruler of the power of the air? Well, that's Satan. He's got his satanic, you know, he's got his demonic realm that he's ruling over. And so, you know, he says, Paul goes on to say, "The spirit that is now working in the sons of disobedience, among whom we also formerly conducted ourselves in the lust of the flesh, doing the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest." And so, you know, that's the first three verses of Ephesians. And so we clearly see that Paul is teaching the church at Ephesus, and by extension us, he's teaching that there is a demonic presence in this world that is a ruling presence, and that hasn't changed. I mean, and you know, even this is, he's speaking after the cross, and so even though that rule has been defeated at the cross, even though Christ defeated them, Satan, at the cross, that defeat hasn't been fully inaugurated. That his kingdom hasn't been fully inaugurated, and we still live in a world that is by and large controlled by Satan. And so, you know, as Christians, though, we are to be salt and light in this world, and we are to be those who preach the gospel so that many can come, so that people can come to know the Lord, and, you know, through the work of the cross. He goes on, and, you know, in Ephesians 6:10, it's interesting because this is really a theme that he carries throughout this letter to the church at Ephesus. He says, "For our struggle," this is, you know, chapter 6, verse 12, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places." And he tells the church at Ephesus, "Therefore, take up the full armor of God, so that you will be able to resist in the evil day, having done everything to stand firm." And so very clearly in the mind of Paul, and really, I mean, ultimately, scripturally, there is a demonic realm that is in control. And as Christians, we're called to stand firm in that. And I think part of standing firm is recognizing that this is what we stand against, and we need to continue to stand against it until Christ returns and fully sets up his kingdom.
So before Christ sets his kingdom up, is Satan trying to set his kingdom up?
Absolutely. I mean, because if you think about, I referenced it earlier, and I didn't fully bring it out, but in, you know, in Matthew chapter 4, right after this actually picks up right after his baptism by John. So he was coronated as king at the baptism. You know, if you look at the end of chapter 3, you know, it says that, you know, God said, "This is my beloved son, in whom I'm well pleased." And so, you know, you see this, basically he was coronated as king, crowned as king right here at the baptism. And immediately he was taken into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. But part of that temptation, what I'm getting at is part of that temptation was chapter 4, verse 8, Matthew 4, 8. "Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, 'All these things I will give to you if you fall down and worship him.'" And so ultimately, Satan wasn't lying there in the sense of those kingdoms were his to give. I mean, they're not ultimately his to give because God is the one who's ultimately in control of them. But I think that biblically we have to see that for this age and well, since really the fall of man until, you know, the full consummation of everything, that Satan has, the kingdoms of this world, that he has been given control of those for God's purposes, for God's glory, ultimately. But that in this day, today that we live in our evil day, that Satan does have control of this world. And yes, he controls the kingdom of this world.
So does Satan imitate God? Is that what he's trying to do? Does he like to imitate God?
You know, I think that it's interesting. I think so, because, you know, you look at in Revelation, and you see that you have the beast and the false prophet.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's almost as if when you look at some of the things that Satan does, that he's trying to be like God.
Yeah.
That he's and I guess, I mean, ultimately you use the word imitation. But yes, I mean, I think that you could say that in that being like God, he's imitating God, you know, because, you know, ultimately, if you think about it, God is the one who defines everything. And so if Satan is under his authority, if Satan's under his full control, then the only thing that Satan is not a creator. I mean, he's not creating out of nothing. God is the only one who can do that. And so if Satan's going to have power, then ultimately the only way he can have power is if he's imitating God. I mean, the truth of the matter is that, you know, even as men, we imitate God either for good or for bad. I mean, ultimately, you know, Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. I mean, we're called to be imitators of Christ, but we're called to be imitators of Christ in the right way. But if we try to usurp power and authority, we're trying to usurp what only God has, you know, that any power and authority that we have is only from God. So if we try to usurp that, then ultimately we're trying to be like God. And really, that's the first lie in the garden. If you eat of this fruit, you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. And so, you know, that's the lie that was in the original lie in the garden. And it's still the lie that men fall for today. And it's the lie that ultimately Satan lives by.
Yeah. And if we look back, I mean, in Genesis, when God created man, a human, that was a big thing. I think we kind of look at that and go, yeah, of course he did, because we're here. But I think that was a big thing. And it seems like ever since that, Satan has such a deep hatred for the human race. Like you've talked about, well, I think it was one of our podcasts, you talked about AI and all this stuff, the technology. It's all to wipe out man.
Absolutely. He hates man. I mean, what's interesting is that, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of I think it's called ironic retaliation, where, you know, where I think that God created man and Satan knew what God was going to do with man. And Satan, I think, and I know this isn't, you know, this is just kind of reading between the lines, but I think that Satan was so jealous of what God was doing with man that Satan rebelled. I think that was the source of his rebellion. And then what's ironic about that is that through that rebellion, then God raised up, you know, that taking mankind down with him. So basically Adam and Eve taking them down with him. And so then that gave rise to a redeemer. And you know, that was God's plan all along. So, you know, God created man, Satan rebelled because of his jealousy and hatred for man, which then God used to raise up a redeemer who is 100% man, 100% God, who is his only son, who exists now as a man. And he's the one who's going to lead us and actually ultimately defeat Satan and lead us back to the garden and beyond. Hmm. You know, if you think about it, that's what's happening. And, you know, we're just part of that overall grand battle that, you know, that we can't see directly, but we see the fruit of it, you know, in our everyday lives.
You know, this just popped into my head, which is kind of dangerous. When you're talking here, it almost on a large scale, we are us Christians are like Job, and Satan is is doing things, but only what God allows him to do. There's things going on around us that we don't really aren't aware of, but there is God's protection still, but God does allow certain things to happen. So, I mean, that just popped into my head because I was thinking of Job and Satan hating humanity, but wanting to show God, hey, he's going to curse you too. Just watch.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there's many lessons that can come from Job. One of those lessons is that God is the one who said, have you considered my servant Job? And so, you know, he not only does he, you know, we speak in terms of allow, but God ordains these things for his glory. And so, you know, the life that we're living through, you know, is part of this incredible cosmic battle that, you know, that goes on that we can't even come close to fathoming. But at the end of the day, we know it's going on because we see it in Scripture, and it's no different than what, you know, ultimately what's happening in this world and what's going on. You know, we see it at an individual level, but we also see it at a corporate or a larger level with kingdoms of this world, whether it be the United States or whether it be, you know, Rome or whatever kingdom, you know, in the past. It's just part of that incredible cosmic battle that we don't completely understand. And so, you know, with Job, we're just kind of caught up in the middle of it. And ultimately, it's all about God and his glory. And, you know, thankfully, we get the benefits as Christians. We get the benefit of being with, you know, with the winner. And, you know, that ultimately he's going to have show his, you know, his glory to everyone. And we get to be a part of that, you know, because we bowed our knee today to him, you know, prior to the end. Every knee will bow, but we who have bowed their knee to in this world that benefit from what, you know, what the Lord is doing.
As we zoom in on Job, and you see that Job and Satan, we know behind the scenes that what happened even before all that, when Satan came in front of God and said, hey, let me do this and let me do that and I'll show you. But as we pull that back, I mean, it just, when it came into my head that is all of us Christians kind of living in that as we pull back. It's Job represents us. And,
you know, one of the things that's been popping in my head that I think we ought to kind of talk about for a minute or two here is, you know, having a biblical worldview, because, you know, I think that's a weakness in many churches. They sort of, you know, it's, you know, like the first 11 chapters of Genesis is sort of, you know, it's there, but you know, we don't necessarily think that it's something worth fighting over. And then, you know, Revelation is another one. There's so many people who would say, well, you know, it's all going to pan out in the end. You know, we're pan-millennialists. We just think it's all going to pan out in the end. But I would say that as we go into these perilous waters, as we continue to go in more and more perilous waters, I would say that those who have a fully biblical worldview, you know, even if they have a different understanding of, you know, like say they're all mill or they're pre-mill, I can understand both those views. And I'm obviously, I mean, we talked about it before, I'm pre-mill, but, you know, and staunchly so, I believe that's the best view of end times. But, you know, anybody that gives up those things, that give up the edges, that give up the beginning and the end, I don't think they can sustain the middle. I mean, I don't think that, I think it's going to be important that as we go through this great difficulty, I think those who have given up the beginnings and the beginning and the end, you know, Genesis and given up Revelation as something that's understandable or even matters, I think they're the ones that are going to struggle the most as we go through this. I mean, I think for me, I'm so sold on, you know, what God is doing in terms of, I may not completely grasp and understand everything. Like I may have some areas that I need to understand more. I do have those areas that I'm not as strong as I need to be. Yet I do believe that there is a biblical storyline that ultimately God created and God wins. Mm-hmm. And I see that from Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, all the way to Revelation 22. And so I don't know how you can be a Christian and stand against what's going on and capitulate to some of the things that even at a level of it's unknown. Like, I'm agnostic when it comes to creation, or I'm agnostic when it comes to, you know, what happens in the end. I just don't think that that's going to stand up to scrutiny as we keep going down this road. I think that those who have a robust understanding from Genesis 1 to Revelation 22 are the ones that are going to be able to stand up to what's happening. You know, they're the ones that are going to be able to stand firm.
Yes, I agree. You know, I was thinking, because you've taught so much on Genesis, and it's really helped solidify the foundation of everything. Like, you've helped me at least open my eyes, and I knew of the creation, that it is history, it's not just a story, and that is the basis of everything. We look at marriage, we look at, you know, the relationships, like we talked about men and women, you can talk about homosexuality, women pastors, all that stuff, and then even going, you were talking about the law, the Ten Commandments, all connected to Genesis, and when you do that, the Bible, the it's like a 10-inch foundation of concrete that cannot be cracked. And if, like you said, if you ignore that and say, well, there's no foundation to anything. You can make marriage anything. You can have women pastors. You can't, because there isn't any foundation.
Yeah, I mean, if you give up creation, if you give up, you know, that God spoke the world into existence, or if you give up, or if you begin to capitulate with the worldly view of, you know, of evolution, you're giving up biblical authority. And, you know, you're giving up, you know, Psalm 24 says that Yahweh created the world and all it contains. And, you know, that you're giving up, you know, Moses talking about God creating the world in 6 days and resting on the seventh. And, you know, that you're giving that authority up. And you call it a 10-inch, you know, 10-inch concrete. 10-inch concrete can be cracked, but, you know, it's a foundation that's been built. You know, Genesis chapters 1 through 11 are as a foundation that's been built that can't be cracked. It stands. It is what the Bible stands on. And every important doctrine, every critical doctrine to the Christian faith finds its foundation in Genesis 1 through 11. And I will scream that from the rooftops for the rest of my ministry, hopefully for the rest of my life, that's what we need to continue to go back to. And, you know, we're going to move into, over the next few months, we're going to move into looking at Revelation, because I think Revelation is just as important. And, oh, by the way, Revelation is, John alludes to Genesis and Revelation more than any other book of the Bible. So John understood that the foundation was Genesis, and you know, that's what his understanding is built on. All the apostles understood that the foundation was Genesis. Christ understood the foundation was Genesis. So I think that we ought to understand that as well.
So you have an engineer background, right?
Yes.
So how big of a concrete do we need? If 10 inches, I was just throwing that out there. I was thinking 10 feet maybe would be better, but.
Yeah, think of the Hoover Dam, maybe.
That much concrete?
I mean, but it's the biblical foundation.
It's a rock, maybe a better word.
Yeah, right? That's what I was actually thinking. Granite, you know, granite. Like that sort of foundation.
Yeah,
you know, something that can't be moved and can't be. I mean, because it's ultimately the foundation of everything. I mean, I my understanding and my view of Genesis. Not me personally, but as a Christian, your view of Genesis really will change and solidify or weaken, you know, your understanding of Scripture. And I see it over and over. I see, you know, people who are capitulating to the world and saying, well, you know, they can, you know, even with marriage or homosexuality or transsexual, you know, all of those things find their basis in Genesis, and, you know, in terms of being able to refute them. And if you don't have that basis, then, you know, you're left with trying to refute it from, you know, arguing about what, as an example, what homosexuality really means, you know, what it, you know, what arguing about words and their meanings. But ultimately, you can't argue that God created them male and female, and he created the first couple as male and female to be together. And that's the order of things. He didn't, that's what he set forth in Psalm, in Genesis chapter 1 and 2. And, you know, passages like Psalm 24, 1 actually solidify that understanding, because that's because he created those things. And that's the pattern. That's what he expects us to follow. It's as simple as that. It's a matter of pride and sin that keeps people from believing that. So
yeah, and there's some, like you said, there's some churches that just skim over that really quick. Let's just get through this and let's not dig into it. But
well,
like,
yeah,
I was going to say, you like you just said though. I mean, if you're talking about, let's say you're talking about a female pastor, right? Why is it wrong? And you're standing there and you don't link it to Genesis, and you say, well, this is what Paul said, and then they come back and they say, well, Paul's talking about the culture. It's different now. Women have the gift, and you need to let them teach. If you don't go back to the foundation, if you go back to the foundation, it makes so much more sense.
That's well, all. Paul went back to the foundation. Paul tied it to the found to the beginning. He said, I mean, he says that, you know, he was the one who first sinned, and so who first, you know, he's the one that first committed transgression. You know, ultimately in Adam, all have sinned. So, you know, it was Adam's ultimate failure, but. I mean, he said that Satan tempted Eve. And so you that's where it all started. So that's the basis that Paul uses for not having women pastors, because they're not, yeah, not meant to be leading in that way. God created the male, the men to lead in that way. And that's not some situation where we're saying women are not, you know, that are somehow they're less. Actually, they're created equal. They're created, you know, as joint heirs, but they have a different role. And we see that from the very beginning.
Well, one of the things I just want to touch on before we end this today is we're talking about when a society abandons divine authority and Satan building a kingdom. We're living in the end times. Things are getting crazy. I was going to ask you, have we ever seen a war on children that we are seeing today? In my lifetime, I've never seen children being attacked on all sides.
Yeah, well, I think that's been we kind of alluded to it earlier through the education system. I mean, that has been, children have been the attack. I think that by and large, Christians have been able to protect children in terms of they haven't been able to come into the home. But I think at least it's been more difficult to come into the home. I think now, though, you have not only schools and using that direction, but they're also attacking through, you know, the cell phones. So, you know, you have parents who are giving their children cell phones at a very, very early age, much early. You know, I see kids with cell phones, playing with cell phones, you know, at, you know, in restaurants, you know, when they're, you know, 2 years old. And, you know, and so that's only, you know, that's a step away from just giving them their own cell phone. And so you have, and that's important to say, to bring up, because now that worldview is coming through the you know, what they're watching and seeing on the cell phone. And you can't trust, you know, Disney's off the ranch, yeah, in terms of, you know, they're anti-God. They've been anti-God for years. And they only, you know, recently have been taking the, you know, any veil that they might have had has been taken away, and their agenda is clear for anyone who wants to look, who cares, you know. So yes, the attack has been, you know, through the education system. It's been through, you know, things like Disney and other entertainment that's out there that's anti-God. And so yes, I mean the attack has definitely been there. And I think that, you know, obviously that attack is multi-pronged, because I think that, you know, he's been attacking women and taking women out of the homes. And so you have a situation where they're sending their kids to school to be educated. The women are pulling out, and they're in the corporate world now, and they're, you know, battling it out with men in the corporate world, and nobody's at home watching the children. And so not only have they stole the schools, but now they're stealing the homes, and they're putting trash into the homes through, you know, cell phones and television and you know, those things. So yes, I don't know any other way to say it, but yes, there is an absolute war for the minds and hearts of our children.
Well, when you look at it, it's got to be satanic. We look at abortion, right? 63 million babies killed, just murdered. We look at transgenderism. And I asked you this earlier, and it's one of these weird questions that I sometimes pop into my mind is, and you've answered it already. When we think about it, is when did schools and why have schools, why is it their job to change the sex of children? But when did that become a main priority instead of teaching math and reading and all these other things? When I was in school, transgenderism wasn't even, you know, it wasn't even mentioned.
I don't remember even thinking it was a thing. Like transgenderism wasn't even something that was brought up in my upbringing, but you know, because male was male, female was female. No, I think that it's an agenda. Like it's an agenda to destroy man. I mean, it's
satanic.
Mankind. It's an agenda. It's a satanic agenda to weaken and ultimately destroy what God has created. You know, because God created man and said it was very good. And you know, Satan has always had an agenda to destroy. He created a male and female. And I think what we're seeing is that you're seeing that attack at the very highest level. And, you know, it's so funny because we bring up the flood a lot, or I do. And you know, it's really no different than what was happening at the flood. They were attacking, you know, the females at the flood. I mean, they were attacking, the demonic realm was attacking through the through females. And it's the same kind of idea today. You know, you take women out of the, you take women out of the home. You know, you remove them from the home, and now all of a sudden they're in the corporate world. They're no longer bringing up and nurturing the children. They don't see that as being, and I say they, I'm speaking by and large, I'm speaking to society, doesn't see, you know, being a mother and being a wife as being important. You know, don't see it as being critical priority. And so, you know, that allows for this attack to happen. And so they're attacking through, you know, these agendas, and it's just part of that attack that's going to continue to escalate. You know, as Christians, we have to stand firm, especially in our own families and our churches, about what the truth is so that we can stand against, you know, his schemes and lies.
Yes. And I was saying, I agree with that. And it's so sad when you think about this, because we have peanut butter goes with jelly, peanut butter and jelly. We have SpaghettiOs goes with bologna sandwiches. And we have, you know, grilled cheese goes with tomato soup. And now this is what's really sad. You put together story time and drag queens. I mean, it's just so sad. It is sad that story time for kids is now drag queen time. And it's just, it's sick. It's sick. We live in a sick world, but it's going to get sicker. I
mean, it's interesting because, you know, we had one of our guys send us it was basically a professor, I think, of a college. And he was tying, you know, homosexuality and the queer theory to, you know, to some of the things that we're seeing with pedophilia, and it really is a sick. There are sick people that are incredibly sinful people who have been allowed to run rampant and really push these agendas in our schools, such that, you know, as these kids graduate, they don't know, they have no clue what right and wrong is, and you know, they're so confused. And I can only imagine, if it continues to run the way it is, I can only imagine how bad it's going to get. But I will say, I do want to, it's interesting because I feel like I'm always negative, and I don't really want to be negative. I don't want to look at our society and be completely negative. I will say it's very difficult not to be, but I will say it's interesting. I listened to an interview of the current president of El Salvador. And he actually, why this is important is because El Salvador was one of the most crime-ridden, like dangerous places to live in the world when he came to power. And in 2 years, he eradicated the gangs, and El Salvador is one of the safest places in the world to live today. I had no idea until I saw this interview. what's interesting about that is that he reintroduced prayer in their cabinet meetings. Mm-hmm. And so they actually prayed for God's wisdom in leading the country into prosperity and according to God's wisdom. And it worked. Like, it literally, it worked. I mean, God answered their prayers. I mean, you know, when you look at the result, and, you know, you can do your own research on it. Our listeners can do their own research on it. I don't know. I can't say the guy's a Christian. I will say he does have a Catholic background, and I think he might have an evangelical background. Not quite sure where he lands, but I will say that he has shown that following and instituting, you know, God's plan for, you know, a nation is actually something that would, it's actually something that works. And so our nation isn't, you know, so far gone that we couldn't have, you know, men be raised up, you know, that will lead us in that way and will lead us back to, you know, prosperity. And that should be our prayer. I mean, we should be praying, you know, that God would tarry and that many would come to know him through evangelism, but at the same time that our country would be prosperous and that he would give us, you know, if it's 100 years, I mean, I know that the Ninevites were given, you know, I think it was 100 years, what is popping in my mind, you know, when Jonah preached and, you know, before their ultimate destruction, you know, when they reverted back, but who knows what the Lord might do. The Lord might, you know, grant us repentance and we, you know, follow his ways for, you know, centuries before he returns. And I pray that we'll see that. I pray that my grandkids and my great grandkids and great great grandkids will see a prosperous United States and a prosperous culture. I think that sometimes we get, as you know, you and I, because we take a pre-mill understanding, because we see things going from bad to worse, I think we can kind of miss the boat a little bit, that there is hope that the Lord might tarry and that he would give us prosperity. And if that happens, I'm certainly not going to shake my fist at the Lord and say, I thought you were going to come back within 20 years. You know, why did you do this? I mean, so I think our hope should be that the Lord would show restraint and that he would show mercy on this country and on this world.
Amen. You know, I'm a positive guy and I appreciate you saying that. I'm positive that's never going to happen, but I'm glad you said it. I'm so glad you said it. Because I believe we're heading into dark waters here, but you could be right.
No, there's hope. I'm not making a prediction, Keith. I'm just saying, you know, for those that may be struggling with our dour outlook, you know, that, you know, I my hope is that the Lord would tarry and that many, many, many would come to Christ. I pray that there would be, I've prayed for many years that there would be a great revival in this country. You know, that there would be many to come to know the Lord and that there would be generations that would pass that, you know, would benefit from this incredible revival. I pray that things get bad enough that people realize and call out to the Lord and that he shows mercy. I do. That's not what it looks like. I mean, that's not what I'm seeing. I mean, in terms of if I were, you know, again, we're not prophets, but, you know, as you read the tea leaves, so to speak, that's not what I'm seeing. But our hope should be that the Lord would show mercy and that he would ultimately be, you know, ultimately either way, we want him to get the glory. And so whether that's coming back soon or whether that's coming back 100 years from now or whatever he chooses, whether there's a, you know, a long period of apostasy and, you know, before he comes back or whether there's a, you know, there's some revival and among God's people, you know, that's stuff that's above my pay grade.
So. Yeah. Yeah, and all kidding aside, I hope and pray that that happens as well. So that's wonderful. Well, you want some SpaghettiOs? You've been listening to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church Gainesville. For more information, go to gracegainesville.org. And thanks for listening.